As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Soccer Show. We're here to talk about the end of the international break and to look back at some of the biggest storylines going on in North and Central and South America that have broken in the last couple of days. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host, and I'm joined by the one and only Felipe Cardenas. Felipe, it's great to have you back on the show.
What's happening, man? How are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. How are you doing? You well?
I'm doing okay. You?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Holding up. It's all a bit wild in this international break. There's been a lot of storylines flying around. But I'm excited to talk through a couple of the big ones here with you. We're going to start with the USMNT. I mean, a successful break on paper. Two wins from two, top the group into the semifinals of the Nations League. It's mostly all you can ask for, especially under an interim coach. But we're going to talk about the ups and downs of it. Here, I just want to start with Ricardo Pepi because he's had a majorly progressive break. I think there have been question marks over this number nine role for a long, long time. There's obviously been the overshadowing cloud of whether Flo Balogun is going to declare for the USMNT or not at this point, and I imagine that'll be feeding into the psyches a lot of people. Daryl DK started a couple of these games to show that there was faith within him coming back from that injury, but Ricardo Pepi has staked a claim that he needs to be remembered within this setup for what he's good at, and what he's good at is scoring goals.
I'm just going to say right off the bat, I truly believe this. I think he's the future of the national team in that position, at the number nine position, Ricardo Pepi. I really do. Like, I know he's young, and there was a lot of hype right away when he, you know, burst onto the scene, still as a teenager with FC Dallas, and then went, you know, his debuts. His first few games for the national team were great. He was scoring goals in World Cup qualifiers. And, you know, I like him because you can see that he's a player that is still green, but he can score goals. He can score goals in multiple ways with his head inside the box. He's two-footed. He can finish in multiple ways. And he, right now, you mentioned it, you know, he looks like an angry striker, like a player that truly believes that he got the raw end of the deal, missed the World Cup. And now in hindsight, you really do wonder, you know, why that decision was made. The strikers at the World Cup for the United States did not deliver. And I understand there's a bit of a profile cluster here where you have the strikers of the U.S. men's national team all play the same way. They're big, they're back to goal. But in the end, you want a guy that can finish, and I think that even with the Flo Balogun sort of drama and the expectation happening, I think that has fueled Ricardo Pepi to once again show everyone, including this interim coaching staff, like he can be trusted. And he came on and against El Salvador and did that right away. It was a great sub. It was a great substitution. The timing was excellent by Anthony Hudson because listen, El Salvador I really loved what they did in the first 45 minutes, but yeah. they don't have the team to go toe-to-toe for 90. And you could see that they couldn't get out of their own penalty area in the second half. They were out of, they had no legs. They were out of gas. And you take off DK and you bring on a player that is so hungry to prove himself. And that's what Ricardo Pepi did. So I still believe that he's going to be a big focal point. Maybe he's not the guy because Flo, as you know, Jack, is just a totally different profile. And that's the striker that the U.S. doesn't have, you know, the pacey striker that can get behind the lines, that is going to be dangerous and really test an opponent's back line with speed and precision. And again, he is a finisher as well. So again, I'm just happy for Ricardo. I think he did well, and I still believe I'll repeat it. The future of this national team, honestly.
I think you're right. And I think you're right with or without Balogun. Like, right. I think either way, there's enough space in here to, one, potentially play them as a pairing because they're different enough in profile to be able to, one, to drop deeper, play as a kind of quasi 10, and then the other to get in behind. I think there's space for that. But also, there's enough games, and we have increasing amount of international games year on year at this point to have more than one striker who's able to lead the line. And I think, you know, you look at Pepe's record this season for Groningen, who have been pretty dreadful, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, they're 17th in the Eredivisie. They've been really poor, and this is a good side usually. They're usually kind of on the edge of the European places, that mid-table spot. They've been quite comfortable there. This season, they've fallen off a cliff, but he's still got 9 in 21 in the Eredivisie, which isn't bad at all, considering he came in mid-season. And I think when you look at those kind of records, they're the kind of things you click and be like, that's a player back on the up. Now, whether he goes back to Augsburg next year or whether he goes elsewhere and someone else comes in for him, I think he's starting to find his feet in Europe. And I think we saw that in this international break, that he looks much more comfortable than he did the last time we saw him in a USMNT shirt.
It's almost like, this is a cliche, it looks like a man. And I think playing for these bad teams, that'll help a young striker. You know, Augsburg also a tough place to go. They're not a contender ever. They're always battling relegation. I've spoken to other players. I spoke to Michael Parkhurst, the former U.S. men's national team captain, who went to Augsburg, and it was also just a dreadful experience for him. You know, it's like it's a tough place for a foreign player, especially an American player, and it's an organization that's always, like I said, at the bottom of the table. And this is, he was a teenager, you know, Ricardo Pepi going to that club didn't work out. You mentioned he goes to Groningen, and it's like he has matured. He's now experiencing, I think, the tougher side of European football. And he couldn't wait to come back to the national team and to show his quality and show his worth. And he's done that. So yeah, I think if Balogun does decide to play for the U.S., because now the latest reports, Jack, is like England haven't forgotten about him. They haven't forgotten. They're going to make one last recruiting push, you know, to try to land him. But if they don't, it would be an interesting prospect to see how those two strikers can play together. Again, the two striker setup, I think, is making a gradual comeback tactically. And if the U.S. can kind of figure that one out, once they figure out the coaching situation out, then that could be a very fruitful partnership moving forward.
Yeah, I think it would be very, very interesting to see how it goes. Obviously, I wanted to just quickly talk about Christian Pulisic, because it's not been easy since Graham Potter came in at Chelsea. And yet every time he seems to pull on the national shirt, he seems to continually perform, which is nice, I think, generally for both him, obviously for USMNT fans as well. But generally, I think when a player is having a tough time at club level, to be able to go back and show that you still have it on a regular basis at international level is good for his prospects of potentially a move this summer, but also just in terms of feeling confident within himself when he does get on the pitch for Chelsea. And he's spoken after the game about the fact that he wants to use this to kick on under Graham Potter. But I believe now he's the highest scorer ever for a player of his caps at this point. It continues to work, and he continues to shine in the Stars and Stripes.
It reminds me, as a Colombian, it does remind me of James Rodriguez when he was at Real Madrid and wasn't getting the playing time that he thought he deserved. He was under Zinedine Zidane and Rafa Benitez. It was just like not a good situation for him. But every time he showed up for Colombia, he just performed at the highest of his levels at his quality. And he would talk about it. He one time said, I'll show up here and play on one leg if I have to, because in Spain, they were reporting that he was injured and that he couldn't play for Real Madrid. But Christian Pulisic has that same current pathway. You know, hasn't gone well with Chelsea. He's always battled injuries throughout his career, but especially with Chelsea. And the coaching change, I think that was a big concern for U.S. fans and pundits. I remember talking about it last summer. That's not an automatic guarantee that, like, oh, a new coach comes in, you're going to get more playing time. And that has happened with Graham Potter. He hasn't found a consistent role. And so it remains to be seen where Christian Pulisic will be, you know, moving forward at the club level. But to your point, he's always going to be the star of this team. He may not be the captain. Tyler Adams is going to captain this side if he's healthy. But especially against Granada, I know Granada should not have even been on the field with the U.S. But what I took away from that game, which was a 7-1 win, was that players like Christian Pulisic and the Premier League players took it very seriously, and they played really well. You know, Pulisic was really good in that game. He dropped off against El Salvador a bit, and I think that's a bit of a concern, where you want to see that consistency every single game. I still think that's something that Pulisic, can get to. But yeah, I think he also is showing in his public remarks about the drama between the Reinas and the Berhalters. You're seeing a player that really understands it, that went through a World Cup, understands that this team now has done what they hadn't done before, which is just perform well at the top tournament in the world in Qatar. And now they have that confidence to get through. But you said it. There's not much else to take away. A player coach should have gotten them to the Nations League semifinals. This is where they were supposed to be. So now we're going to see what happens in games that really mean something against Mexico and potentially a final. And that's where we're going to see the uncertainty of the coaching situation really come to light.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is obviously this space in there that I assume at some point, and we talked about this a while back, but generally when you're looking at what happened and the fact that someone wasn't brought in immediately, and it's going to take some time for the US to get to that point where everything is settled in the back room again, that actually this season feels quite nice, or at least the summer feels quite nice. There are problems with it in terms of actually getting someone in and making sure that they're the right person, left, right and center, fine. But generally, I think that you look at this way the Nations League shaked out, and the way that it's going to shake out in the summer as well, it just feels like it's a space for someone to be like, okay, I can come in and just guide us and it'll probably work out okay. And so far, so good. The one place I was a little bit concerned was this midfield depth, because yeah. I think that obviously Tyler Adams not being available, we haven't seen Brendan Aaronson massively played in that central role that he often occupies for Leeds. I thought that Luca Della Torre did okay, carries the ball well. He started to get a little bit more game time now at Celta, which is nice. But it does feel like that the US lack bodies in the middle here when things get tough.
Yeah, I think the two areas of the field where the depth is a concern is central midfield, as you mentioned, and as always, left fullback. It's a position. It's two positions that are very thin. And yes, you have good players there. You have Yunus Musa, Tyler Adams, but that's about it. You know, if they're injured or they're not healthy or they're not playing well, it does feel like quite a drop off, and not just in quality, but in style and profiles, like very different players. And so a coach there has to really adjust and manage that situation if those players aren't healthy. You know, just this is perhaps for another show, but you know, there are a couple young players that they're just very young that are currently in MLS that I think fit that mold. One is Owen Wolf, who plays at Austin FC. He's a central midfielder, more of like an eight, but he is projecting well to eventually be part of the national team program. He's still very young. He's a teenager, but you can see that type of player is being developed stateside. Aiden Morris, who plays for the Columbus Crew, also a very good number six that had an ACL injury last year. And, you know, I watched him last weekend and he was very good. in their 6-1 win over Atlanta United. So it's just going, again, we go back to the coach, though. Like a coach is going, the new coach is the one that's going to have to look at that position and then start to bring up these young players to give them opportunities. Because, you know, Kellen Acosta is talked about a lot. He wasn't part of the squad, and people were talking about, oh, he was snubbed. You know, I like Kellen because he's a specialist. Like, he can, his dead ball is really, really good. But again, he's not the same player as Tyler Adams. He's not the same player, central midfield player, as Yunus Musa. He is very much a stay at home guy that just keeps the game in front of him. Yeah. And you're not going to get a lot of dynamic play from him. And I think this is a team that wants to continue to really push the ball and progress it quickly. So yeah, it is a concern. And I think you saw that in these two games that, and I would also say that El Salvador particularly really targeted those parts of the field, the middle and the wing, especially where Alejandro Zendejas was playing. You know, I thought there was a plan that El Salvador had to just try to limit the creation out of the midfield and limit a player like Alejandro Zendejas, who I think everyone understood would be trying to show what he has from playing in space.
Well, I wanted to talk about him. So you've managed to segue for me, which is perfect, because obviously this is the first time we've seen him after formally declaring that he's going to be committing full-time and permanently to the US. The fact that there are now these two games against Mexico coming up, one obviously in the semi-final of this, but also then in the Clásico as well, it just feels like it's lined up for something special. But, you know, to make your entry at that point and to cap it with a goal 2 minutes later is a nice way to be like, oh, by the way, I finally arrived.
Yeah, I mean, Alejandro Zendejas, I feel like is, you know, he made a decision, an interesting one, because he's choosing this project that is currently in flux, you know, from a sporting department, right? No manager, no sporting director, no general manager, no direction really right now. It's just very temporary, but he chose, obviously, with his heart, like, this is a player that grew up in the United States. It's a Mexican American in a Mexican American household. He was produced at FC Dallas, developed there, but he has a career in Mexico. And what I found interesting is that just in reading the reports in Mexico, it was like they claimed him very early. And the thing is, he played for Mexico. He played for the senior national team, and he probably shouldn't have legally, you know, by FIFA standards. Like, he clearly,
well, both games forfeited because of his use. Yeah.
And so he was given opportunities. You know, Tata Martino gave him opportunities. I remember he was not good under Martino. In games where Martino, it wasn't a FIFA window, so he used a majority of Liga MX players. Alejandro Zendejas was part of that and just didn't perform. But he has a future here, and the next manager has to figure out what his best role is, because he is a unique player. He can play as an inverted winger. He can play centrally a little bit as an attacking eight or an attacking 10. He's much better in space. Like I mentioned, El Salvador clearly had a plan to not let him turn. He could barely, get forward. He had a nice, some flashes. I found that he was very still apprehensive around the penalty area, though. But you mentioned it, like, he's going to play against Mexico very soon. If he's going to be part of this project, I think Anthony Hudson, particularly if he's going to be the manager through the summer, he's going to call up Alejandro Zendejas. And so that's going to be just a massive, massive moment when he plays Mexico in the Nations League semifinal. I don't think he'll be part of the April friendly. I don't know if Club America will allow him to leave if it's not a FIFA window. But certainly for Nations League, he's going to be there, and it's going to be a huge, huge moment.
I don't know if Club America will allow him to leave just because they're like, no, you're not going, considering some of the comments that have come out after that one came across.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's flip to Mexico, though, because not a great window for them. Now they've squeaked in to the semi-finals here, although it did take some late magic. And it just feels like this felt like it was going to be a new start for Mexico after the World Cup. And instead, it just feels like more of the same jumbled mess. And, you know, I'm going to throw to you to basically try and pick up the pieces, you know, break out the bones of what's gone wrong here. But that over-reliance on Raul Jimenez to score goals, that kind of, that feeling that Santi Jimenez was going to be the guy, and it hasn't really quite started to go yet. The over-reliance on Diego Lainez, who has struggled again in Europe this season to get anywhere near a starting berth. And it just feels like everything's a bit all over the place. And, you know, you've just said that Zendaya has picked the project that feels in flux.
Yeah.
To be honest, I feel like both projects are in flux. It was a choice. It was a Sophie's choice in many ways.
It's disarray. It's disarray for more obviously way more in Mexico, because it's just the problem is the culture. You mentioned players, yes, but the problem is the culture that I think this is a really interesting way of putting it. This is what the reports are coming out of Mexico now, is that the fan base has just fallen out of love with their national team. And that's a big problem, because then when they play at the Azteca, you know, one bad pass, one bad touch, and the fans are right on top of them. You know, that game against Jamaica at the Azteca, Diego Coca, the new manager, he is an Argentine, but he's a two-time Mexican league champion with Atlas, made history there, former player as well in Mexico for many, many years, knows the culture, knows the players. He was booed right away as soon as they introduced him at the Azteca. Several of the players you mentioned, Diego Lainez, Guillermo Ochoa, the goalkeeper, Raul Jimenez, booed at the Azteca. And the late magic that you mentioned, it was late magic from it was also late magic from Guillermo Ochoa, the goalkeeper. Jamaica should have won that game. They had the late chances to steal that game and knock Mexico out of the Nations League semifinal. So it is more of the same, because Diego Coca, which is so interesting, Tata Martino was hammered for not giving young players enough opportunities. Even though, if I remember speaking to him in Mexico City in December of 2021, he told me, "I'll give you every player that I've tried out." And it was like over 25, 30 players that were U23 or younger. And in the end, this is a coach that just preferred to take a more veteran team to the World Cup. The biggest problem for Mexico is that I feel like they can't just do it. They can't just say, we're going to go with it with this younger generation. Diego Coca started almost, I think, 10 players against Jamaica that started the final game against Saudi Arabia at the World Cup. It was the same team that Martino chose. It was the same team that was heavily criticized for the way they play, for their profile and everything. So, and you mentioned Diego Lainez, you know, he had to move back to Mexico. He's with Tigres now and he's playing, but he's not blowing up the league. You know, he's still a player that's coming off the bench, you know, to try to turn things around. So it's more of the same. And the more of the same is this, the toxic nature of the way the team is covered and the way the team is perceived by their fan base. So it's going to be tough. Diego Coca now, he's going to have back-to-back games against the United States. So that is his opportunity to to win over the fan base. Because what happened under Martino, even though he started well, won a gold cup in 2019 over the United States, those three losses to the USMNT just completely blew up the project. And Diego Coca cannot follow that same path, or it's going to get really bad.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. Obviously, it's not good. I do think that this Jamaica side is somewhat underrated.
Yeah,
it's one of those stuff. They're a good side, and they went through this, you know, obviously process of bringing in dual nationals, and we talked about earlier, obviously. But it seems like it's settled now. Obviously, Bobby Reid scores one of the goals of the season.
Amazing goal, which
is lovely to see as a Fulham fan. But more than that, you know, you're looking at Leon Bailey, who plays for Villa. Jimmy Nicholson plays for Spartak Moscow, if I'm not mistaken. There's a couple of these. It's Championship, Premier League, you know, MLS players. This is a very decent unit. You know, one of the best
goalkeepers in the region, Andre Blake. He was injured, though. He plays for the Union, but he's a top goalkeeper in CONCACAF, without a doubt. They know how to play Mexico in Mexico. They were a problem during qualifiers, and you know, that's just a team that I think Mexico didn't want to see right now, and they were lucky to get through, to your point.
Yeah, no, completely agree. It looks like there's a lot of work to do, and I wonder how long, as you say, you know, as a cultural thing, it's going to take to flush that distrust out. And you know, I don't support England, as you say, but I very much watched England's stretches through the years, and there are places where you can see that the national team are kind of pariahs almost. Yeah. And it's taken a complete resetting of the circle for that to come out the other side again and people to be excited about it. It takes a long time. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
I'll say this before, you know, I was talking to Elias Burke, our colleague as well, you know, West Brom fan. And, you know, he asked me, what is the problem with Mexico? Why can they not produce a good team? And this is obviously an Englishman, an England fan. And he said the same thing. Like, I understand, like, right now the England team is well supported, right? Like, despite the drama that's always around the Three Lions. But I think when you mentioned pariahs, that's the danger of the Mexico situation right now, because when Tata Martino was the coach, it was just easy to say the coach is the problem. He was the wrong guy. He's not getting anything out of the players. Yeah. We need a new coach, anybody. And so now they've changed the manager. And what's happening in Mexico right now is that now the top networks, the fans, now they're all agreeing suddenly, maybe it's the players. And that's what the players are feeling now. And that's a dangerous slide. And that's one that, to your point, doesn't happen overnight. Even one win against the United States isn't going to just suddenly change the narrative. And now the Quinto Partido, the famous quarterfinal berth that is supposed to be, you know, the godsend for Mexican football, that's not going to be good enough either when they're hosting the World Cup. You get to the quarterfinal and you're out, you're a failure suddenly. So it's just, it's incredible, the pressure.
Also, you know, the emergence of Canada as you know, a genuine potential top of the CONCACAF tree now, it is really interesting in terms of how things look. And you know, I saw Carl Larin speaking about the fact that he called Canada CONCACAF's big boys, which I did. I really enjoyed as a comment. But obviously, they've come third, so they'll play Panama again second. Very impressive that Panama to come out of that group with Costa Rica in second spot in the seedings. Very impressive from Panama. But you look at this and you go, okay, right. So where did Canada sit in this now? And, you know, Larin might have been slightly tongue-in-cheek with what he was saying there, but I think the relative strength of this Canada side suggests that Mexico could find themselves very comfortably bottom of the three sides who are hosting this next World Cup, and that's not where they're going to want to be.
That's not where they want to be. Remember, I spoke to the now former Mexican Federation President, John De Luisa, this was last winter. And he said, our goal is to be a top eight nation, you know, in the FIFA rankings, you know, and that's not a long-term goal. He was thinking before the 2026 World Cup. And obviously they want a challenge for that World Cup at home. But yes, Canada is suddenly here to spoil the party. And that's another side that knows that they can defeat both of the big boys in CONCACAF, both the United States and Mexico. They've done it. They did it during qualifying. I sort of clapped back at Laren yesterday on Twitter, and it was, I also, using tongue in cheek, like I love their swagger. I love their confidence. That's what makes them such a dangerous team. But you've got to deliver. You have to graduate, Canada. I'm talking to you, Canada. You need to graduate from being the darlings to being a contender. Like, that's it. That's how you become part of, you know, the so-called big boy club. You've got to win in your region. And yes, World Cup qualifying is a totally different beast. And that's where they proved, you know, their worth. But you've got to win in your region consistently. You need to win a trophy. They haven't won a trophy in CONCACAF in 23 years. And I will go down swinging that their World Cup was a massive disappointment. I know that their group was really difficult with Croatia, Morocco, and Belgium, but they were expected to do something special. Like, I remember arriving in the airport in Doha, and I heard a group of Uruguayan journalists randomly just saying, Canada's my team, watch out for Canada. And then they left with, you know, barely a squeak. And so, again, Kyle Laren, all these players who say that, you know, they believe it, and that's what's great about this team, that they can play against anybody. But time to talk the talk, walk the walk, as they say.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think the Belgium game was the one, wasn't it?
Yes, that was the one they should have won.
And that's where it was. And I completely agree with you. I think they were fun. They were impressive. They won a lot of hearts. The next step, as you say, is winning trophies. You can win hearts. Win hearts is great. But the next one is winning trophies and getting that over the line and making this start, kind of this swing of form and this rise of ascendancy to matter and count in the history books as well. I want to talk finally about Marcelo Bielsa, because there are plenty of rumors, indeed, plenty of rumors that Loco might be on his way to manage the Uruguayan national team. And I just had to put it on paper that I love it.
I love it too. I think it would be great to have Bielsa back in Como Bowl. He had a great spell with Argentina. The problem is it ended poorly. He took them to the 2002 World Cup. That team, we could talk about that. That class was ridiculous, that class that he had in 2002. But they were eliminated in the group stage of that World Cup. It was just a complete disaster. But you know, he won a gold medal with Argentina with an incredible class of players. And then he turned the Chile national team around. Like, he is still, to this day, almost 10 years later, Chile still plays a sort of a style that Bielsa implemented when he was there. Very fast, high pressing, dynamic, home and away. They're a dangerous team. And, you know, him being back in Comebol potentially with Uruguay is just a wonderful story. I would love to see it. And this is a good team. Uruguay is a good team. They just need a coach. But we were talking offline, as you know, until he signs a document, you know, Marcelo Bielsa can walk away from any situation that if he smells something that he doesn't like, or if he was promised something that suddenly looks different in writing or suddenly looks different verbally, he could walk away. But this is a really interesting development, because, like I said, you look at the squad that Uruguay has, some of the players that they have, the young players that are coming up, and this hunger of wanting to be a top side globally, with a coach like Marcelo Bielsa, that makes them dangerous. No one wants to play Uruguay ever in South America. No. Let me just say that. But if they have that guy in charge, suddenly that's like a 12th man in a game that you know you're going to have to defeat.
Yeah, I think this is it. You know, I think you look at Valverde, you look at Araujo, and you look at Darwin Nunez, and you have three of the most exciting young talents in world football in three separate roles as well. You know, you mark out a defender, a midfielder, and a forward there. Not many nations can boast that. And, you know, we know that Uruguay continues to produce incredible footballers and has done for the last 100 years. But actually what we're seeing here is three, I think, in particular, and that's not the whole sum of the parts in by any stretch of the imagination. But I think just those three as well would be in most people's top 20 of under 23 footballers in the world right now. And that's an incredible base to be working with.
It is. And speaking of working, I think this is going to be a big change for Marcelo Bielsa. This is a guy a manager that is coming from club football the last few years. I think he is clearly someone that wants to be on the pitch every day, wants to form those relationships with his players, very didactic in his way of teaching the game. Very obviously philosophically, he is, it's a one-way road. It's a one-way road for Marcel Bielsa. This is a big change with national team football. Obviously you get the players every once in a while. But in contrast to what we're seeing in CONCACAF, where these countries, the host countries, will not qualify, the qualification process in South America is going to go on, and it's going to be tough. Now, 6.5 teams get in, so you're expecting Uruguay should be there handily, but you still have to go through a grueling South American World Cup qualifying process that the format's not changing. It's everyone against everyone. It's home and away, survival of the fittest. And that's going to be a challenge for him to just adjust to that change in his lifestyle, where you're not seeing the players on a daily basis. But something that he loves to do is play young players and be part of the development pathway for senior national team players or senior club level players. And I guarantee it, part of the deal, if this happens for Uruguay, is you're going to see him very much involved in that U20, U17 setup for Uruguay. And you mentioned the way they develop players. That's probably something that he's just rubbing his hands with, knowing that this is a small country that continues to punch above its weight. And they do that because they have such a consistent way of developing young players from the time that they begin as teenagers at club level, and their youth national sides are good. It just feels like a jackpot for a good coach, knowing that you're getting a quality side that is essentially going to be at the next World Cup.
Yeah, with a point to prove as well. I think after this time around, it feels like one of those matches that is so good that you're a bit like, has this happened before? You're having to Google it to be like, has he managed it before? Because it feels right. And I think maybe that's the kind of lock you're looking for with these two. And obviously nothing is ever secure with Bielsa, even when he has the job, in that he can walk away from anything at any time when he doesn't feel that he's being treated correctly or that things weren't right. But I just have a feeling that this would work. It feels like a match made by the football gods.
I think so. I think in terms of style and tactics, Uruguay hasn't been a high pressing side, a full tilt side, a high tempo side ever in their history. They are very much a team that will be very stubborn defensively, and then they can get after you on the counter, or they can just produce goals with the world class players that they have up front, and then they're willing to defend to the death. They will defend a 1-0 lead easily. They have no issue doing that. Now, Diego Alonso, the coach that managed Uruguay at the World Cup, who currently is still in contention, he wasn't fired. He just wasn't renewed. His contract wasn't renewed. And so that's still a possibility that they go back to Alonso. I think that would be a tough situation because they crashed out of the World Cup and his inexperience was targeted by the journalists in Uruguay. Some of the players didn't speak very highly of his tactics. I remember Cavani, Edison Cavani, the mix zone of a game when they were eliminated, he was like, ask the coach about the tactics. Like, it was just, he gave like sort of a insight to the way that the players wanted to play and the way Alonso was deciding to play at a World Cup. But Alonso did institute a little bit of pressing in wide areas with Facundo Pelestri, the Manchester United winger, Facundo Torres, who plays here in MLS. These are like quick young wingers. And they were getting after it. They were pressing teams. And so maybe that's something that Bielsa sees, this new generation of Uruguayan player, that he could implement some of his styles that have worked in his previous stops.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I'm just excited. And it doesn't even happen. You're like one of those where you're rubbing your hands together before anything's actually signed on the dotted line, as you say. But incredibly exciting times for Uruguay if that one does get over the line. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day, but all there's left for me to do is say thank you so much to Felipe for joining us. It's been a real pleasure having you back on, my friend.
Anytime, man. Hit me up next time. Let's do
Absolutely.
It again.
Let's do it soon. This has been the Athletic Soccer Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I've been Jack Collins, and we'll see you very shortly. Take it easy, gang.